that a beeper in there?
No.
No? Good to see you. My name is Fernando. I'm an alcoholic. And I was just looking at how powerful this meeting could be. You know? I'm truly blessed today. Oh, wow. I want to thank Karen for inviting me to speak. I was just speaking this morning to a member, and you know what? It's been a while I haven't spoken. You know, and then the phone rings. And if God works in mysterious ways, this is how it works for me. And she called up and she asked me to share. And tonight, while my wife and I were just hanging around waiting for the time to pass, because I wasn't going to go, my dad's sick in the hospital in Laval, and I was going to go see him, but then I didn't have time to go and then to come back in time, and so, you know, I'm going to go see him tomorrow because I'm starting my vacation this week, and I'm going to go. And so I said to Carmen, I said, you know what, we'll go tomorrow. And she said, fine. The phone rings. And it's this guy on the French side who wanted me to speak tonight. Lord, all I asked is that I wanted to speak, you know, like not every day. And Wednesday, I'm speaking in Brossard. So I get that tour, you know, and then we calm down, you know, relax. And I have some good news for you alcoholics. If you are an alcoholic and if you're here and if you think there's no remedy, there is. And if you think there's no hope for you, I'm telling you that the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. The people in Alcoholics Anonymous were my angels, and they told me to come here, and they told me that today I have a wonderful life because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I never thought that I could, actually I'm 51 years old, I never thought that I could live past the age of 18, 19 years old. You know, I already had predicted. You know how some people, I'm also a drug addict, by the way. I did all kinds of drugs. I did all kinds of crap. You know, I don't have a drug of choice. Any drug that you give me and tell me that it's good, I would take it. And I had no boundaries, you know. So, and I actually, with a couple of buddies of mine, was saying, you know what, I could picture myself, you know, at the age of 30, you know, doing crack. You know, on the balcony of my house. What house? You know, I could actually dream of those days where one day I'll actually, you know, have a wife and kids and a picket fence and all that stuff and, you know, still smoke a doobie, you know. And I used to think about that, you know. And guess what? It didn't happen. It's never going to happen, I don't think. God has put me here today just for you. You know, and just for you, for me. So Alcoholics Anonymous is about me and you, and which you create we. So I really love this program. Let me tell you, I'm overjoyed. I don't know what, I used to be nervous because I say, oh, I don't know what to say. And today I don't have to worry about that, you know. My Creator has provided me the right words at the right time to say what I need to say. Because I asked them to. And it's amazing, when you ask something from the good God, He always provides for you. No matter how old you are, or which background you have, it doesn't really matter. Once you ask and you knock, and He shall open, and you will receive the blessings that you really want in this life. But it wasn't always like that. I was a diagnostic. I didn't believe in God. There was only one perfect person in this world, and that was me. And I always lived like that, you know. I didn't think about it, but I did. My parents came here in 1961 for a better life, for a better way of living. We came in 1961 in February. I was about 6 years old. I remember the snow covered grounds at Dorval Airport, and I loved snow so much. I played with snow, that I've been playing with snow all my life. Usually the cocaine addicts now start to laugh, you know. But and that's the way it happened to me. And I never felt part of this family, this immigrant family. I have six sisters and two brothers, and I never felt that I was part of that family. My sisters were going to school, they were getting A's and B's, and me, I was getting E's and F's for fantastic and electric. You know, and I don't know if you're a student like me, I don't know what it was, but I couldn't pay attention. I couldn't study. You know, I always had this problem. I didn't hear things right. You know, I think I have an illness from the get-go. I didn't hear stuff right. And my mother used to talk to me, and somehow I'd tune her out. And the only way I'd really find out what my mother talked about was when she had the slipper in her hand, and it was on my body, you know. And I was raised tough. I was raised very, very hard. And I grew up, and the first time I wanted to, the only thing I remember doing, wanted to run away. I wanted to run away from home because these people didn't understand me. You know, my sisters were doing their own thing. My brothers were older than me. I had to learn the hard way. I think for me it was the hard way. I'm sure other people lived harder than I did. But this is my story. This is what my little cocoon was. I was so self-centered about myself, wondering if there is a God, why, what the hell is going on here, you know? Why do I have to struggle in my life to even learn how to play guitar? I thought that you should be born with the gifts already of knowing what to do, you know? If God made you, well, then you should know what to do. I didn't know that you had to work hard at it. So you see, already, you know, even before I started drinking, I already had the disease of perception. Okay? So I perceived the world to be a different way. And that's even before I took a drink, you know. My mother would give me a shot of whiskey. We call it aguardente in Portuguese. It's fire water, and the Indians used to call it. And she'd give it to me and run, and I would go to school, and I'd feel really warm inside. And believe me, 32 below zero, I didn't feel a thing. And it was like that for many years. And I remember when my sister got married, there was wine everywhere, and I remember just drinking them. I don't know if I did it on purpose to get away from anything, but at that point in time, I had no idea what I did it. I just did it. I have no idea why I became an alcoholic. I guess I loved to drink. I just lost myself in all this stuff of sadness, because I thought I never belonged, you know. I'm all over the place. I don't know where to go with this. It's just that I remember they kicked me out in sixth grade. You know, sixth grade. I was ashamed of that. I'm ashamed of a lot of things in my life. And that will come in my fourth step, of the stuff that I was ashamed in my life. And I was ashamed that they kicked me out in sixth grade and they sent me to an all-boys school, St. Anne's Occupational Center, right in front of the Salvation Army. And I remember the rubbies. In those days, they weren't called, today, those days they were called rubbies. Today, they're called homeless people, you know. They were cooking shoe polish. They were melting it, and they were drinking that, you know. And I was then, at that age, I was sniffing nail polish remover. And we would be in that corner, and I would look at the guys there, and I would say, at least I'm never going to be like that. You know, so already, I'm looking back in my life, and I was saying I was already at that stage. Usually some people that I meet, they start with a little doobie, they start with some booze, and they go on, they do hard stuff, and then they end up with nail polish remover or glue in the streets. Well, me, I started right away with the glue and the nail polish remover. I knew what it's like, and I progressed, you know. I became a crack addict, I became a deviant, I became a liar, a cheat. The French people, I like the French people today because they picked a name for me, and that name is Crassard. You know, I'm a good crassard, and if I could get a chance to cuss you, I will, you know. And if I could get as much as I can off of you and get away with it and not get caught, then you don't know who I am. So I became this guy that I put on this shield. I became the wolf man. I became a leather jacket. I got my ear pierced, and I became a man, you know. For me, that was all becoming a man. You know, you don't look and you sort of look at the guy in the eye and you threaten him even before you touch him. They called me wild, they called me crazy, and me, I called myself stupid, but then again, they didn't know that, you know. A lot of things that happened in my life was that in this feeling, there was something missing inside my heart. And I didn't know it then, but today I know it because of the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. I found out to use the right words. In my heart, there was something missing. I didn't know what it was. I had no clue what it was until I came here. I was always afraid to tell you who I really am. I was always afraid. All my life I was full of fear. I was full of anger. And I was full of shame. I was sexually abused as a little boy. I didn't know that that was the cause of much of my anger and shame. I was, told to shut up and not to cry. And if you do cry, I really give you something to cry about. So I was told to hold that in. And that got me a lot of anger. I didn't know that then, but today, by the grace of God, I know that those were the things that were manipulating my life, and I knew, you know, today I know that those things ran my life. I was always full of fear. So as soon as I was afraid of you, I would jump you because I was scared, you know, and then it turned the reputation turned around and I became a madman, you know. And I would, in the mix of all this, I had drugs and alcohol in my system, and I played that part. Always played that part, you know. I ran away from home as many times as I could. I got stuck in psychiatric wards. I got tied down to beds. I did so many overdoses that I can't tell you about. You know, every time I turned the corner, what the hell is wrong with me? You know, I had people telling me, what's wrong with you? Me? Nothing wrong with me. What's wrong with you? Why do you drink the way you do? Why don't you drink the way I do? You know? It was always, the world was going this way, and I was going the opposite way. Anybody else feel like that? You know? I think I'm trying to relate here, and in my life, I knew I found the right place when I came here because everybody talked about the same things that I felt. You know? I didn't belong into this family. I went to school. I didn't belong into that school. I'd get the strap, you know, for not doing my homework. I'd go home because I got the strap at school, you know. So very, very confusing. And meanwhile, here I am. I'm running away. I'm going with people. I'm going with all kinds of people. If you had drugs and if it was for free, I'd go with you. And I'd go with anybody. I started to hustle at a young age, you know, and I didn't care, you know. You gave me money, I'd do whatever you wanted, you know. And I became, and that also had a lot to play in my shame, you know. A lot of things that I was stupid. I didn't have an education. All I had was sixth grade education. They threw me out of this other school. They didn't throw me out. I somehow just grew out of it. And I was 16 now. Might as well go back to work. And you see, and this is just the story when I was 16 years old. You know, and growing up was always, my father would always call me a dog without a master, you know. So to prove him wrong, when I turned 21, I got married, you know. I met this girl in LaSalle, I should say. And, I didn't meet her. I met her daughter, you know. Her daughter came into the store where I was working. I was one of those boys who pack groceries in your bags, you know. And the daughter came there, and I said, if your mother looks like you, I want to meet her. And before you know it, you know, boom. The same night, the mother comes to the store and we go out. And I married her a year later, you know. Instant love, you know. What do I know about love, right? I didn't speak about it yet, but it comes much, much later. I always felt I was doing the thing at the right time because it was the best thing to do, you know. I always thought that my judgment was a good judgment and I was wrong until I came into this room. And then all of a sudden, now here I am. I divorced this woman 5 years later to go live with another pusher, you know. We were both drinking, me and her, very heavily. We'd get into fights. I remember, you know, we were at the Salmar when it used to be the old Salmar up on St. Lawrence Street in Pine, and we'd go drinking, and would finish at the party, and she would head first down those stairs. And I laughed, you know. I was going, she's the one I love. It was all, and I'm laughing, you know. So already I'm warped. I didn't know. I thought, you know, are you okay there? You want to drink some more? You know, like that's the way I used to treat the things I used to do in my life. Like it was nothing, you know. It was nothing. You know. And then like I said, I've been strapped to beds in the Royal Vic at the Allen Memorial. I've been, you know, I walked into emergency rooms, no shirt, no shoes, just my pants, and a summer day only in July. It was my favorite time of year, was July. I could use and drink for how many days, as much as I can, when I could, and I'd get blitzed, and I'd pee my pants wherever I was. I didn't bother getting up. I was a mess. And I came to a point where I would walk into the emergency and I say, I need help, you know. And the nurse would go, what's wrong with you? I'm too hot. You know, I would get so blissed that I needed the doctors to give me something to calm me down, because, man, I was going to go out of it, you know. My heart jumped so many beats, you know. I almost died several times, you know. I woke up, a guy gave me a horse tranquilizer on Friday, and I woke up on Sunday, you know. I was hitchhiking one day in Villa Maria, and I woke up 6 months later in Medicine Hat. You know, if you have a blackout, you know, it's funny today I look back and I say, wow, you know. But what the hell happened in those 6 months? I remember I did stuff, you know. I remember that as soon as I would start to feel a bit, a couple of Quaaludes and a couple of lines would go in, a doobie, and followed by Jack Daniels, and that was my routine, you know. I woke up in Medicine Hat, Alberta, having nothing, you know. I think this guy was gay, because I guess we did some things, you know. But I wasn't sure, and just disappeared. I woke up in Medicine Hat, and here I am, calling my mother. We took a cab from Medicine Hat, Alberta, to Calgary. Yeah. And we gave a bogus check, I think. And before I knew it, I was calling my mother, you know. Mom, help me, you know. She goes, where are you? I'm in Calgary. Calgary, she thinks, my poor immigrant mother, eh? She thinks I was just across the street. She had no idea where Calgary was, you know. And they sent me money, and they came back, and it wasn't just before Christmas. I came back with a big cowboy hat and a very snazzy black silk shirt, galoshes, no socks. And it was minus 30 here, you know. And here I was, there's nothing wrong with me. You know, just the way I dressed was something wrong, you know. And that's just to tell you, and I'm going to speed it up a little bit, because I'm the type of person now that really doesn't want to talk about what happened to me, because we all been there, you know. You've done drugs, I've done drugs, or you've done booze, and you know where booze led you, and it led me to the same thing. And what happened was, by now I was 35 years old, and you know, I could have sat down a long time ago and saved you all this stuff I talked to you about, because my story is very simple. I fell asleep, I was 9 years old, I woke up, I was 35, you know. And for me to take inventory between 9 years old and 35, you were there, you've done what I've done. And I woke up, I was 35, I was working in an after hours, I finally became, I finally got the career I always wanted, you know. I was a doorman, you know, thought I was very important, you know, people loved me. Lo and behold, at 3 o'clock, nobody else is there, you know. I became, worked in Blind Pigs, I always worked as a doorman, a truck driver, and that's all I knew, because I thought in my mind, how stupid I could be, I'd never had an education, you know. And I hit bottom in September 1st, 1989, where I was going to do the world a favor and commit suicide. and notice that I didn't even do that right. You know, how has it been a failure? You know, and what happened was I called my niece Fatima, and I had a 25-cent piece left. I called on the phone. I say 25-cent because when I say I had a quarter left, people who use coke think that I had just a quarter of cocaine, you know. But no, I had a 25-cent piece left, and I called my niece, and my niece would come and get me, and she came and get me a few times from the shooting galleries by now that I was hanging around. You know, I lost all my clothes here and there. I had clothes everywhere. You know, I would look for my cleanest dirty shirt to put on the next day, you know, like the guy in the song says. And before you know it, I'm talking to her in the car, and I'm saying, I don't know what to do. You know, I have this anxiety. You know, I'm going to die, and I want to die. She goes, well, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. I've been to psychiatric, you know, places. I've been to jail. I've been to, psychologists already analyzed me. I was a study at the Allen Memorial when cocaine first came out. You know, they actually gave me the coke to use to see what happens to me. And I did the Kelly Shuffle. Everybody knows Kelly, eh? You know, don't look at me kind of thing, you know. And then all of a sudden she goes, well, why don't you try treatment? Treatment? Why don't you try rehab? Rehab? What's that? Those are words I never heard before, you know. Detox. Detox? Intox. I know detox. I have no clue, you know. And they say, well, maybe you should try it. So I called the OCA. It was the Maisonin OCA in those days before the crisis, you know. And I went there. And, you know, right away, paranoia. Anybody felt paranoia where you think the whole world's out to get you, you know? You're early in the morning, you're in your car, you know, and you're just, you went on a 4 or 5 day binge, you know, and your sunglasses is on, and you know, and you're like this, you know, from the good coke you just did all night, you know? And you're in your car, because I had a car, a Tempo, a white, because it was, I dealed cocaine, it had to be white, with brown streaks on the side from the puking. I don't know if you know, but that's the way I lived, you know. And the cop car would pull right beside you, and you don't want to look at him, you know, because he's going to see your eyes, but you forget you have your sunglasses on, you know. But you're there, you know, and you don't want to look at him, and he doesn't want to, you know, he's going to see you, he's going to find out right away where you've been, you know. Oh, just that is a, just the relief of that, I no longer have to suffer that, is worth coming to the program. Just that little piece of paranoia, not having that, you know. And before you know it, I'm at this place with 20 other men. I'm the only English guy there, and I have no hope in my life. I'm a piece of shit. I'm crap. I'm worth nothing. You know? And they got these things there, the way they do things in rehab. And if you go to rehab, God bless you. I hope you get the best rehab you ever went to. You know? But me, I went to that rehab that gave me hope. And I tell you why. Because I thought so much of myself that I didn't care about me. I had low self-esteem, you know. And they put, one night, they asked you to go to your room and get your pillow and to sit in this big room. And they would put on this tape. And it's called God's Memorandum, and it was in French. And if you can get it today, I ask you, I would advise you to get it. It's wonderful. It saved my life, you know. It's by Hug Mandino, The Greatest Miracle in the World. But it's on tape form in French. And if God had a voice to me... Oh, by the way, I was an altar boy growing up. And I don't know why, but sometimes I would be caught with my hand in the collection plate, you know. Or I would steal the wine and the hosts, thinking that, you know, I didn't have no... I didn't feel... anything sacred. Okay? And this is why it leads me to my story, to tell you that I was going to go to hell anyways because I'd done what I'd done. There was no salvation for me. That I was condemned, and no matter what I did, I was going to hell. And I'm a recovering Catholic, like some of you know. And today I wouldn't change for the world, you know, because it's wonderful. What I'm really getting at is that I heard this tape. And this tape, if God had a voice, He would have the voice I heard. And it's, à toi, de Dieu. You know, something heavy, you know. Authority figure, you know. Because me, I was the authority. And if it was a voice deeper than mine, then you got me, all right? And he goes to tell me, ask me to count my blessings, you know. He asked me to count the blessings I have in my life, you know. What blessings you're talking about? Everything I did turned into crap, you know. Everything. Any person I loved left me, you know. Money just gone, you know. Are you blind? Can you not see the sunrise and the sunset? Can you not see the beauty of a flower? Can you not see a beautiful tree with the wind blowing? There's a blessing. You're not deaf. You can hear the beautiful music. You can hear somebody say, I love you. There's another blessing. Your mouth is not just to talk and to swallow saliva and just to say profanity. Like, this was my tool. The greatest tool I ever had was my mouth. I would cut you down to size just by looking at you and talking about you. But you could also tell somebody that you love them and give them a smile. There's another blessing. Put your hand to your heart. Whether you're awake, whether you're asleep, minute by minute, day by day, second by second, your heart beats without you even knowing that it's beating. And some nights I didn't think it was going to beat at all. There's another blessing. You know, you're walking upright. There's nothing wrong with you. What's your problem? Eh? Count your blessings. When I heard that, you know, I tell you, a physical reaction happened that night. I felt something overwhelming, powerful, enter my body and saying, I've arrived. Look at the miracle. You know, you are my greatest miracle. There will never be another one like you. Whether you're awake, whether you're asleep, there'll never be another one. There's a lot of violins, but there's only one Stradivarius. You know? There's a lot of copies, but there's only one like you. And when I heard that, I knew that that was the hand of God talking to me that night. Well, I know it now, but I didn't know it then. You know? And extraordinary things started to happen after that. I started to get hope. They gave me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They gave me the 12 and 12. And we used to have a small little black book called the 24-Hour Daily Meditation from Hazleton. And today I still have it. You know? You are a miracle. And because me, I'm more than that. You know, I need to hear more stuff. I don't know about you. I never did just one drink. I never only did one line. Now I need more stuff. You know? There was this time when your father and mother had this beautiful time of intimacy, 100 million tiny little sperms swam that channel of life, not knowing where you were going. You swam the fastest. You asked, you said, I heard so many people say, I didn't ask to be born. Oh yes, you did. You know? You swam the fastest and you got there. The 24 chromosomes from your mother and 24 chromosomes from your father created the original person you are. When I heard that, I said, I knew I've arrived, man. You know, that gave me hope. And I started to come to meetings. And I started to hear people. And I did what they told me not to do. I got into a relationship. I didn't do the steps. I stopped coming to meetings. I relapsed after 9 months. And I came back again, May the 13th, 1990. And by the grace of God, one day at a time, I haven't had a drink or a drug or a fix. in the past 16 years. In May, it's going to be 16 years.
Wow.
And that's because of you guys. Because I came here and they told me when I sat down, I had some pretty heavy guys in that time when they were here in AA, and they say, shut the fuck up and listen. Those are the exact words. They didn't say, oh, Fernando, poor baby, don't worry. No, I didn't come in. I didn't need that. Some people do need that. I'm not saying that's wrong. Be gentle with the gentle guys and the gentle girls. You know, but me, I needed. I came from a hardcore family, man. I needed to hear that stuff. And I shut down and I sat down and I listened. Take the cotton out of your ears and stick them in your mouth. Because if you're talking, you're probably spreading your disease. Wow. The nerve this guy had to talk to me like that. You know. And I got myself a sponsor. 3 years later, I got myself a sponsor. I had a sponsor. We sponsor each other to keep the old folks out of our face, you know. You have a sponsor? Yeah, him. You have a sponsor? Yeah, him. You know? And this way the guys wouldn't ask. As long as you had a sponsor, hey, you're safe. You know? Ain't doing the steps. I'm leaving here and I'm going to the peep shows and I'm going downtown and I'm probably ripping off stuff at John Kutsu for special. See the perception I had? I used to steal stuff on special thinking if I got caught, the crime wouldn't be as big. You know? Honestly, you know, when you try to come here, there's nice girls. There's some nice girls in the program, you know, so now you're a stud, right? You know, all the girls love you. Yeah, right. You know? And as soon as they see you coming from a mile away, and me, I said, nah, they don't. They love me. You know? And then what happened is very, very something. I wanted to die even in recovery. You know, I was still lying, cheating, coming in to take places. I wanted you to put my name there for coffee just to hear this. You know, just to be popular. And they didn't want it for me. I almost died. 4 years in the program and not doing the steps. 4 years in the program not having a sponsor to show you the steps. I was living in a 1.5 room apartment full of cockroaches in Cartierville, you know. And I was going to meetings every day and sometimes twice, you know. And one day I heard this man speak, and this guy on a Thursday night at Our Lady of Fatima Church, he's the type of man that was speaking and I could relate to. He was the kid that was in school, and while the teacher was talking, he would look outside and his head would go in la la land. And if you felt like that, I felt like that, you know. I related to that man. And then you know what we do after the meetings. We go to restaurants and talk about other members. You know how it is. You know? And we sit there and guess what? That night wasn't any different. There he was. I said, I had the hair down to here. I didn't look too pretty. I was still in an angry mood. I was still in that face of, what are you looking at? You know? People would shy away from me sometimes. Except the girls. You know? And I say, excuse me, can I speak to you? I was more fearful of him. He thought, he was scared of me. But he didn't know that I was more fearful of him because now I had to confess something. So he was at Nichols and I said, excuse me, can I talk to you? And he goes, yeah. And then the other guy that was with him got up, went with my sponsor, you know, sponsor guy. And, you know, I'm 40 years old. I live alone. I come to meetings for now 4 years. This program ain't working for me. I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have a job. I'm on welfare. There's nothing wrong with welfare. Okay? But I know how to manipulate the system. I had a job and I was caught stealing. And they fired me. I don't know about you, but I'm a dramatic alcoholic. If a little thing happens in my life, I got to call my sponsor and I can't go to meetings. I got to go 4 or 5 meetings a day because I can't handle this emotional stuff. You know, I suffer from emotional and mental disorders, you know. You know, and I would talk to him and I'd say, excuse me, you know, I don't have a girlfriend and this and that, you know. And I start to cry. And I've cried before and I've released all kinds of tension. But this time, this guy starts to laugh at me. How dare you, you know. But he laughs in a way that the whole restaurant heard him, you know. How embarrassing. You know. You know what he tells me? Get off the cross, we need the wood. Stop complaining. What's wrong with your life? Yeah, but you don't understand. I have no girlfriend. That's good. What do you mean that's good? You know, I have no job. What's wrong with you? Are you sick? Are you lame? I forgot about the miracles I heard up in that treatment center. You know? What's wrong with you? Why don't you tell me about your day? Well, I wake up at 11 o'clock, go to a meeting at 12, hang around downtown, maybe go to a peep show if I have extra money, do all kinds of other stuff, go to a meeting at night, go to another peep show before you go home because the women in the program drove me crazy. You know? I had all kinds of excuses. You know? And he told me to get off the cross, we need to do it. You got to get into action. Either you stand for something or you fall for anything. What? Yeah. So he started to tell me you have to clean house. So I went home and I cleaned my apartment. You know? I got rid of the cockroach. I put a piece of steak behind the fridge. They were gone. You know? And I kept coming to meetings. But this time I had a buddy. Yeah, but you don't understand. I need a job. You need a job. So, you know, I just told you about my day. He says, well, do you ever hear the saying, the early bird catches the worm? What? The early bird catches the worm. Really? Okay. So that means, what are you talking about? Well, why don't you get up at 7 in the morning and go to the welfare and ask them for a job? I didn't know you could do that. Can you do that? You know, I was living in a procession, you know, like, and I started to do that. Before you know it, I had a job folding little skirts at Chabanel, you know, $7 an hour. I had a habit of $700 a day. Now I'm doing $7 an hour. And I had money in my pocket and I felt good about myself. And I have this sponsor. I could always call him anytime. Go to meetings with me. And he would sit next to me and he would stand like this because he's a big, short man, you know. And every time I read how it works, he'd go, did you hear that? Did you hear that? How it worked. You know? Rarely have you seen a person fail. See that? You hear that? Rarely. Nobody fails here. You fail because you want to. What? I never heard that stuff. It's not written in the book, but it's his book, you know? He knows. And I'm going to wrap this up because I'm a long-winded speaker because I have so much good news to tell you. I'd just love to tell you all the good stuff that happened to me, you know? And then this guy, you know, out of the blue, you know? Get off the cross, we need to work. Yeah, but I got no money. Don't worry about stuff you don't have. If you don't have it, you don't need it. When you have it, you're going to be worried that you're going to lose it. So if you don't have it, you ain't going to lose it. Simple as that. Yeah, but I have no girlfriend. Don't worry about it. This time you can work on yourself. Because every time you go Google Gaga over somebody, you forget who you are. And I go, what do you mean by that? Well, you see, what happens is your blood in your body loses the brain and goes somewhere else. You stop thinking. You know? I go, wow! I didn't know that. Is that how it happens? You know, a little naive, but, you know, I knew that, but I didn't want to admit it, you know? And so many things happened. I was still stealing. Now he tells me, do you believe in God? You crazy? God? God was a guy up there with a baseball bat. He was looking at, you know, I stopped praying. I stopped praying a long time ago when I was a kid. Why? Because I was afraid God would know where I am if I started to pray. If I go, oh, little Lord, oh, there you are, you little shithead, you know? And I really thought that God was like that, you know? I have a friend, Mickey Bush, and he's the same way. He was the same way until I met him in Toronto. And I use this story because I related so much with him because I believed that so much, you know? And then my sponsor would say, well, why don't you put your boots underneath the bed? Get on your knees. Get on my knees? Somebody might see me. You live alone, Fernando. Nobody there to see you. So put your boots underneath your bed and when you're there, say a little prayer. Just say thank you for the night you've given me and at night say thank you for the day you gave. That's all it was at the beginning. You know? Yeah, but you know what? I still go to Jean Couture and I steal stuff on special and now I have a God in my life. I have a little job. I'm feeling good about myself. And he asked me to come into the room and be quiet. Don't talk to the women. What? Don't talk. Well, talk to men. Don't talk to women. I go. What do you mean? He says it's safe for you if you don't talk to the women because they see you coming from a mile around. Then he asked me like this. He said, "Would you let your sister? I have six sisters. Remember I told you? Would you let your sister go out with a guy like you?" Hell no. I'd kill her and I'd kill him. So you see, folks, I had to change. You know, we talk about change, and some of us change a little bit. Some of us change a lot. And then there's some of us like me who could keep a little, you know. But you know how dangerous that is? I had to completely change. I had to clean up here. Mine had to be washed up, believe me, because I know who I am. You know, I thought I knew who I was, but God told me that I belonged to Him. You know, and I have to be a man. I'd be a good man. And how does a good man act? With respect and honor, you know. Those words were there, but they weren't ever practiced. The words were all there, but they were never practiced. I had to live it, you know. And before you know it, today, I'm living a wonderful life. I'm married. My wife is Carmen. Some of you know who she is, okay. She's been with me for 8 years. She's been with me for 10. We've been married for 8. This is the longest relationship I've ever had. You know? And you know why? Because I didn't run away. I didn't run away from my responsibility. When we get angry, we talk about it. When we're sad, we talk about it. And you know what? We pray together today. Which is something I never thought I'd do with a woman. You know? Because I didn't think like that growing up. You know? This program has taught me more. Today, I work in a warehouse that I have the keys and I have the code to the whole $3 million warehouse that I work for. What responsibility is that? A drug addict, alcoholic. You know? Anybody wants any empty glasses, let me know. You know? Because that's what we do there. You know? And people trust me. And I wake up in the morning, I go to work, and the guy had maybe a hangover from the night before, and I know them, you know, the drinkers, because I used to look like that, you know. And he asked me, "Hey, Vern, how you doing? Another day in paradise, yeah?" I go, "You're full of shit," you know. They you know. But then as soon as 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock comes in, I said, "You know what? I didn't lie, steal, drink, or drug. I'm feeling good today." You know why? Because God has put people in my path. You've put me in my path, you know. You led me to this wonderful thing called sobriety. You know, the steps are all there. Just go up and get it. It's a buffet. You have to get up and get it. I've heard so many, nothing I have today is original. Nothing hit me in the flash of light overnight to come and tell you all these things. These things are already told to me. I have a sixth grade education. I didn't write books on anything yet, you know. I didn't come with a cyclopedia of all the fancy words, you know. I met this guy in Toronto. He told me about relationships. Really exciting love affair turns into outrageous nightmare. Sobriety hangs in peril, you know. You got to be working for you first. And then before you know it, you'll be giving it away. Yeah, I don't know how it works, but somehow the more you do, the more you get. The more you give, the more you receive. Some paradox here, you know. And today I'm telling you that it's not for nothing. We know each other for a bit. We're friends. She's my sister. Some days she's just a girl. But today she's my sister. And I have friends here that I know for years that I haven't seen. And guys who I thought were dead are here. Isn't that amazing? You know, I'm here to tell you that, you know what? The whole thing of my message is this. I'm here to tell you the truth. And you know what? This guy I met, the truth will set you free. Do not be ashamed of the truth, because that's who you are. Once you get a sponsor and you release all that anger, that stuff that you have, you know, and get rid of it, because it's only hitting you. Nobody else knows but you. But if you get rid of it, all of a sudden you have room to put all this loving stuff. If you wish it to be loving, the choice is still up to you, you know? I didn't know that. I thought I was forced into this, but no. The choice was mine. I chose to put God in my life today. I chose to put Jesus Christ in my life today. I choose to go to church today. I choose to get up in the morning and shave and take off the other mask I used to have, you know? To pretend, you know, that I'm more tough looking with the pinch, you know? Look at me with the mustache, you know? I really don't care. I am what I am, you know? And that's the way it is today in my program. I don't know if I helped anybody. But if you're new, if you want to see a miracle, look in the mirror. It starts with you. There'll never be another one like you. So while you're here, make it count. You know? Make it count. And share the love that you have in your heart the way they told me to share the love I have in my heart to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Fernando. I remember you from the times where we women looked all glad to see you, but we didn't hang around and chat for long because you're a scary guy. And what a change. What an absolute brilliant change. It's not my privilege to thank you tonight, but Sandy's going to do that.
I don't think I've ever heard Fernando share before, and if I did, it was a long, long time ago. And you talked about the remarkable changes. You talked about the fear and the insanity that led you to these rooms. And you didn't even think you were that crazy, and I can identify with that. I can identify thinking that I was okay. I just didn't understand why everybody else, you know, when they started drinking, why do you stop? I just couldn't understand that. And how you came here and you were able to stop drinking. And that wasn't enough. After a period of time, you needed to change. It was hurting too much. And I can identify with that as well. The sense of needing to change, needing to get direction other than the one that you were supplying yourself with. And I'm sitting there listening, talking about, hearing you talking about, oh, I got him as a sponsor, I got him as a sponsor. And sounded awfully familiar. Awfully familiar. You talked about changing, growing, and being a participant in your own life. Being a participant in your own sobriety. Not directing it, but living it. And that's the key. Thank you very much on behalf of Sunday Nighters and myself.
As far as I know, there are no chips or cakes tonight. We all do the seventh tradition now, which basically reads that AA does not accept any contributions, financial or otherwise, from any outside interest. AA members contribute voluntarily to meet their group expenses, such as rent, refreshments, literature, and to ensure that we contribute to AA services.